Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's ahead if it can quit while it's behind. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
It's been a trying week in British politics, Steve. So trying, in fact, you requested that we do this podcast while drinking alcohol.
Yes, unfortunately my request was denied.
Well, I mean, partly because there's no way it could possibly end well, and also partly, thankfully, Donald Trump has not chosen to pontificate about Brexit so far. So we can't quite link Trump into Brexit, at least not yet.
He did actually pontificate on it today.
I hate everything. I bet it was really good advice for the UK's staunchest ally. I bet it was great.
Almost certainly. It's the best advice, the most intelligent advice, the greatest advice.
Now we have momentous things to talk about in UK politics, not just the standing down of Vince Cable, or at least one of the Vince Cables.
I think all of the Vince Cables are standing down now.
Consecutively?
Consecutively, yes.
Hello, Mark, by the way. Oh, in fact, Mark's new podcast, Nevermind the Bar Charts, is now, it has a name, quite a good name, actually, and is worth checking out. I'm sorry, listeners, we are going to try and do, actually, I'm not apologetic. We are going to talk about Brexit, and we are going to make a success of it, unlike the Prime Minister. So we're going to go quite philosophical, though, on this podcast. We're going to talk about, when is a meaningful vote meaningful? When is Brexit actually Brexit? And when is a government not a government? Listeners through what exactly has happened this week, because I think it's fair to say, Steve, some people are a bit confused as to what's going on, and that probably in some way includes us.
So much seems to have occurred, so much drama, so much ridiculousness, yet nothing meaningful seems to have actually come out of it yet. So it's just an absolute cluster F word is the politest way I can think to put it.
A cluster Willis.
A cluster Willis, yes.
It's going to be fine. Just sit down. Here, you got your cocoa.
Yeah, got my cocoa.
And we'll just talk you through it. It's all going to be okay. It's not actually going to be okay. We're still screwed. But the episode will be all right.
The episode will be fine. And by the end of it, listeners, if nothing else, you will at least understand why we're all screwed.
We'll start with Tuesday. Tuesday was the date of meaningful vote 2, the return of the vote. This time it's personal. If you remember, the Brexit deal last time was defeated by 230 votes by MPs. It was the biggest Commons defeat in history. Although Theresa May thinks that actually asking the people if they've changed their mind in a referendum would be insulting and undemocratic, it's perfectly fine to ask MPs if they've changed their mind in a matter of weeks. And indeed, it's okay to ask them again, because we'll have another meaningful vote next Tuesday too.
Yeah, that will be meaningful vote 3, Revenge of the ERG.
I think that's the one that Michael Caine stars in and is definitely not as good as the other two.
Almost certainly not.
I can't imagine how bad meaningful vote 4 will be.
I'm pretty sure that is the electric boogaloo of this series.
Big part in meaningful vote 2 is Attorney General Geoffrey Cox, him of Cox's codpiece, of the booming baritone voice. Now, Geoffrey Cox is a barrister by trade, and if I'm honest, he looks and sounds like someone who's trying to play Rumpole of the Bailey in an Amdram production. Now, he was a key figure because on Monday night, Theresa May went to Brussels and spoke with Jean-Claude Juncker. Over the weekend, it was said that talks were deadlocked. There was nothing going on. On Monday night, Theresa May said that there was progress on the Irish backstop. Finally, there was a breakthrough. And I think the idea was that she was going to pull a rabbit out of a hat that she could show to MPs and say, look, we've got the negotiations. We're able to exit the backstop like you wanted. Now vote for the deal. Vote for it, you bastards. Only trouble was, it wasn't really a rabbit that she pulled out of the hat. If we're going to kind of extend the metaphor further, she said it was a rabbit she was pulling out of a hat. What it really was is pulling a teddy bear out of the hat, which had a sign stuck to it with a pin that said, "This is a rabbit."
Yeah, pretty much, because Jeffrey Cox, the Attorney General, turned around and released a piece of legal advice, which essentially, right at the end, he went through an awful lot of gubbins before you got to the actual meat of the issue, but fundamentally, when it came to the last couple of paragraphs, and indeed those last few final sentences, he turned around and said in his review, "Nothing has changed," to coin a phrase from Theresa May. His legal opinion was that there was still no real legal way for Britain to get out of the backstop. Whilst there a procedure had been put in place to enable it through kind of mutual agreement, if the EU could not come to a mutual agreement with us on it, there was, you know, legally we would still be wrapped up into the backstop.
Well, the UK, I think, issued a unilateral declaration, which is a posh way of saying we were talking to ourselves.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair to Jeffrey Cox, every other international lawyer who read it had the same view that he did.
Yeah.
There was no real way that he could change his view, but what he did was put it in pretty stark terms in the final paragraph so that every journalist could find it.
Yep.
It wasn't just Jeffrey Cox. In fact, and it might be the most traumatic thing I saw this week, the opinion that we couldn't leave the backstop was also the opinion of the ERG's Star Chamber of Lawyers. The arrogant swine, Steve. They have a Star Chamber. What kind of a name is that? It makes them sound like Darth Vader's attorneys. Essentially, Cox didn't provide the codpiece that was needed for MPs to try and back this deal. So not enough of the ERG came around. People did. David Davis, former Brexit secretary, turned wannabe James Bond. He voted for the deal. I did a few others, but it wasn't enough. So on Wednesday, we had the vote that was promised by Theresa May a few weeks ago. It was said, okay, we've defeated the Brexit deal. We need to now have a vote on whether or not we want to have no deal as a thing. So the government motion went through and was submitted that said, we don't want no deal. No deal is bad. But because Theresa May can't help being a little bit clever and can't help trying to try and turn any sort of victory for her into a massive catastrophic defeat, she also the government also added an addendum to that, which basically said no deal is still the default position when Britain comes to exiting the EU.
I mean, that is true, though.
I mean, it is true. But it also, the whole point of this vote was to try and rule out no deal. Take it off that metaphorical table, which is being strained. Strained almost as much as if Nicholas Soames and Eric Pickles were both sitting on it eating a rather large sandwich. So it felt like a bit of a slap in the face, I think. So understandably, you had a cross-party amendment that went through with people like, I think, Yvette Cooper, Caroline Spellman, Nick Bowles as well. And they amended it, and their caveat essentially was that the House declines to approve leaving the EU without a withdrawal agreement and a framework for the future relationship on March the 29th. Essentially, it ruled out no deal in all circumstances, so it kind of tightened up the amendment even more. Spellman, in fact, wanted to withdraw the amendment, but Yvette Cooper kind of forced it through, which annoyed a lot of the Tory Remainers, I think essentially because the Tory Remainers are cowards and don't want to stand up to the government.
Quite likely at this point.
That amendment, though, goes through by 312 to 308. So that was the really tight motion. At which point, then, that motion goes through to the final vote. Now, Theresa May had said that she was going to offer a free vote on no deal. I'm guessing the other, she would expect cabinet resignations, a rupture in the party, it would be bad times. So it was always going to be, if this motion got amended in the way she didn't like, the government then starts saying it's going to whip MPs to oppose the no deal amendment.
You're still following us, listeners?
I haven't. Well, I've been nice, and I haven't mentioned the fact that they tried to bring back the Malthouse Compromise. That failed too, because it's mental. Steve isn't following it. Steve has now kind of put whiskey in the cocoa and fallen asleep in front of the fire. The government whips MPs to vote, essentially to vote for no deal. The Prime Minister herself goes through the no lobby in favour of no deal. On a three-line whip, four cabinet ministers abstain on this whip. So Amber Rudd, David Gawke, David Mundell and Greg Clark all abstain. And the motion, therefore, even though this one was whipped by the government, it manages to lose even greater than the free vote from before. So this motion was defeated 321 to 278. Absolute madness. And again, when it comes to when is a government not a government, well, the whole point of the government is it depends on collective cabinet responsibility. You had cabinet ministers abstaining on a three-line whip. That's madness.
Yeah, it is practically unheard of. I mean, have we even got to the summation?
No, we've not even got to that bit yet. We haven't got there. We've got to, Sarah Newton, who will be the subject of a Not Enough Champagne quiz question at Christmas, she resigned, as did Paul Masterson, who I'd last heard as being on the front page of the Daily Telegraph as being one of the traitorous, rebellious bastards.
Really?
They made him a PPS and then he resigned.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
It's like the reverse Ruth Smith. He resigned to do something principled.
LJ's going to not like that.
Well, it's funny because it's true. So, MPs vote to rule out no deal, sort of. Of course, at this point, MPs have now said what they are against and haven't really said what they're in favour yet. But we have then the vote on Thursday to extend Article 50 so that MPs can spend more time talking about what they don't want and maybe even try and find something that they're in favour of. The vote on Thursday was to extend Article 50 until the end of June. Steve Barclay, the Brexit Secretary, closed the debate in favour of voting for an extension on Article 50. He said it was the principal thing to do. Then he voted against the government motion that he just closed the debate in favour of.
Welcome to British democracy in 2019.
The interesting thing, though, about Steve Barclay is, it might be the only interesting thing about him, he was actually the most loyal, or one of the most loyal Conservative backbenchers in the whole of the 2010-15 coalition government. I believe I'm right in saying he didn't rebel once.
Oh.
So he was an ultra, ultra loyalist, voting against the government on a motion that he spoke in favour of as a minister. Just only gestures kind of convey the madness. But if Steve Barclay wants to defecate on any credibility he has, that's kind of fine.
Yeah, that is his prerogative.
It was a free vote. Crazy things happen at free votes. We know this. But the chief whip, Steve, Julian Smith, the chief whip, abstained.
Yeah, and the chief whip abstained because he knew that he would need to act as a negotiator between the two different camps in the Conservative Party, and that if he had voted either way, it would have basically meant he couldn't do his job.
But that's not the point of a chief whip. The point of a chief whip is to enforce discipline and enact the government's agenda. It makes no sense. It's like the police trying to be the middle ground between the criminals and the victims of crime. There is no middle ground. You have the people who are following the government line, and you have the people who don't. He can't become like John Humphreys on the Today programme and say, this felt on both sides, who knows what's going on. No, it's not his job.
I mean, fundamentally, this just shows how broken the Conservative Party has become. Like, when your chief whip can't even take a stand on the government's position of the day because he knows it's going to just cause civil war.
But, and it's not even like, the whole point, we need the delay to not have no deal because it would be an absolute catastrophe, as we've said already on the podcast. Like, it's not like it was a particularly controversial thing. If it's a free vote on a moral issue, like abortion, say, or gay marriage, which we've had free votes on in the past, I think, fine. I might not agree with how you would vote, but I can kind of see it on that level. This is just stupid. And as you say, there's no way, no what?
But again, it is stupid, but fundamentally the issue is that the people who are effectively the bosses of the Conservative MPs, their Conservative, local Conservative Party associations, are massively in favour of no deal. So they're all running around like headless chickens because even if they are wanting to be sensible, they know that if they are sensible, they're going to get in trouble with their local party.
I mean, it's a point I've made before on the podcast, but the fact that somehow Labour under Jeremy Corbyn is seen as being extremist party
because of momentum.
In hoc to its own members, this party within the party. Well, Conservative Party members, a majority of them want no deal, are the most extremist version possible. And yet that doesn't really get mentioned first past the post system of government is You vote for one of two main parties. One of them gets a majority. The whips manage to whip to vote for to make sure that MPs vote for the government legislation. And if you don't like what the bastards have done, you kick them out and the other party gets in. That is broken now. The breakdown of the two-party system has looked like maybe it had stopped a couple of years ago with the election result, but actually is continuing apace. You've got whips that can't even be bothered to try and support government legislation and get it through. MPs want to try and differentiate themselves on the party line, partly to their members and partly to the electorate.
Basically, everything that could go wrong with British democracy kind of is going wrong with them. So the institutions, the rules, the traditions, all of these things seem to be just be kind of lining up as dominoes to be knocked over by each other, all in all leading to just an absolute clusterwullus of...
Clusterwullus of madness is what we should call the Netflix series when this comes out. What we think is happening... So what's happening on Tuesday is Meaningful Vote 3, the one starring Michael Caine, that's being put to the test. It's not even really worth speculating on whether or not it goes down, I don't think. I mean, short version is she needs to win over the DUP, which they're trying to do this weekend. She needs to win over more ERG members and probably a few Labour MPs as well. That's a big ask, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very, very difficult. But hey, at this stage, given the tightness of where we are with everything, maybe it is doable.
And the way she's going to try and do that is by saying, well, we've already got a delay to the end of June. If we pass the vote on Tuesday, we'll have a delay for 3 months to pass all the necessary legislation. Because, again, as we've said before on the podcast, the withdrawal bill is just one of the legislation that needs to get through. There's immigration bills, trade bills, all sorts of stuff. If Meaningful Vote 3 is not passed on Tuesday, instead what will happen is May will look for a long delay, a long extension of Article 50. There's talk of 21 months, maybe a year, maybe two, but it would be significantly longer.
It looks like Theresa May is trying to basically put the fear of God into the ERG and the DUP by basically saying to them, look, if you want Brexit, it's either my deal or we're going to have to extend this. And given how tight some of the votes that have happened in the past few weeks are, including one by, I think it was moved by Hilary Benn, which was basically one for basically Parliament kind of either doing indicative votes or kind of taking control of the actual Brexit process, which lost by, I think, something like two votes. Basically, the Parliament is very, very close to being in a position where it will vote to actually just take control of the process, which means if that happens, then no deal definitely goes off the table. A soft Brexit becomes probably the most likely outcome, but not leaving at all becomes a lot more likely. So what Theresa May is hoping is that those kind of votes and the potential for a delay and an extension of Article 50 will result in the DUP and the ERG falling in line because, well, the alternative is no Brexit at all.
What I think is interesting is that although this week has been all about the madness, it's been all about the chaos of watching... in fact, we haven't even mentioned the spring statement, hilariously, in which Philip Hammond said maybe we have to renegotiate the Brexit deal while sat next to Theresa May. A lot of it's been about the parliamentary drama and the chaos of the votes. But actually, if you kind of take a bit of a step back and look at a kind of bird's eye view of the Brexit process, we've essentially got to the position that Ollie Robbins, who is Theresa May's kind of Brexit envoy, was overheard talking about in a bar in Brussels a couple of months ago, which is, well, what MPs will be offered is May's deal or a long delay. That's where we've got up to. So we've got there by hook or by crook. So the kind of big outlines, I think hold, and there's a few fundamentals that are at play. And I think, as we've said quite a few times already on various episodes this year, is a lot of what's happening with Brexit is part of the Tory party leadership dynamics. It's a bit of a psychodrama in the Tory party. And how that is playing out amongst members, amongst leadership contenders, is kind of really interesting. Then also the fact that May's tactic hasn't been to pivot. She's not going to try and pivot to reach out to opposition MPs. She's not going to try and change her deal and change her red lines, unless maybe the EU forces her to as part of the Article 50 extension process. Instead, she's trying to play that war of attrition and try and run down the clock.
She's getting closer bit by bit, but the clock's running out. So can she actually get through that?
The people who are voting against a delay to Article 50, people like, but Gavin Williamson, Chris Grayling, Andrea Leadsom, Steve Barclay, Liam Fox. The kind of, if you were to do a shortlist of who would be the worst person to, there's definitely people who are putting markers down.
Yeah, absolutely. And Go Party itself and its members are rabidly pro no deal. The next leader of the Conservative Party is going to come from the Brexit and ERG wing, or can at least talk the talk enough to persuade them that they are legitimately into the idea of a no deal Brexit.
But I feel like if Meaningful Vote 3 fails and she looks for a long delay, I do feel like the best way that May can actually unite is by resigning.
But then Theresa May has shown signs that she's desperate to lack the self-awareness to realise that that's not possible. And as a result, I can't see her standing down for that. I still think she wants to hammer on. Except that even if it does get through, she's still not going to be able to do anything.
Brexit might be taking up all the government's time. We'll try and make sure it doesn't take up all the podcast's time. Though I dare say our next episode will be on whatever happens next week. And then we'll go from there.
Maybe
our website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. We have a Twitter handle, which is @nochampagnepod. And our Facebook page is notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. Happy plotting.